Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out. Because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me? When you don't believe what I say, we can go on together with a special smile, and we can build our dreams on a special smile.
We're back at the races. Call to say hello, and Rolly Gift, and FYC, Little Fine Young Cannibals. And I think, Case, we got to work. Yeah, we gotta get back to our, yeah, we got to get back. At least maybe the two breaks, we can get back into our musical accompaniment. While we wait for Eric Mitchell, let me catch up on a few of the weekend results. And how about out to Santa Anita for that force out, which we'll talk about. But a couple of the stake results in that Cal Cup Derby. Jeff Mullins for Red Baron's Barn, Rancho Temescal, the Glenn Porter bred Munnings colt. Fast draw Munnings that went off his third choice, actually, and paid $10. That paid $10.40 with Drayden, and outgamed Baltus and Jim Rome's straight up G. That was in the Derby. This was interesting, and you know, it was a lot. Straight up G's, you know, wants to be on the pace, and actually was able to sit a little bit off of Highland Ghost, but then was a little vulnerable late, and fast draw Munnings by a neck. How about the? There was that maiden claimer. Let me slip this in, actually, because Make Mine Wine was certainly usable in that maiden claimer. It seemed to me, by pedigree, that Make Mine Wine was a down the road type and wanted, you know, would have wanted a little more distance. But once Herrera got the lead, proved game and was really never threatened late. That Arthur Spooner from the outside was okay for Ryan Hansen, but Make Mine Wine and I think I want to say was like third choice, like 3-1 or 7-2, but went off at 7-1. So basically was a kind of ignored. That started the sequence. Ali Gatto, the question about Ali Gatto in the unusual heat in the Turf Classic, was the stretch out for me with Glatt. Certainly was usable and one of the ones, but I tried to tiptoe through with Indian Peak and Camino del Paraiso. Whooping Jay was very disappointing down inside. Took a lot of money. Went off favored Whooping Jay. That was a little surprising. Was 6-1. Ended up going off 2-1. Crash Corrigan. I thought you could get through with Scary Fast Smile and Crash Corrigan in that allowance. That got us to the Fillion Mare Turf Sprint, and Legs Galore was terrific in here. I was really excited about betting Eddie's New Dream, and she ran okay, but Legs Galore just kept finding more and wins, and actually went off as the near second choice. Warren Showtime was favored. Then Brickyard Ride, nice return for Brickyard Ride. Craig Lewis, boy, oh boy, what a trooper he is. He wins the Don Valparaiso, I think for the second or third time. And then in the Nightcap, which was a fun race, that Cal Cup Oaks, Rose Dawson made the transition to turf. I mean, to me, the storyline was, the favorites were all going dirt to turf. And she ran well, there's no doubt. And some of the prices that we tried to play with, including Vaping Angel, just didn't, they weren't there. Vivacious Vanessa was okay third. So anyway, the pick six, the force out, took a lot of money, almost $4 million bet in, and it ended up paying $2,600, which was, that's nice. It was havable. It was hittable. There's no doubt. But that's that was Saturday at Santa Anita. Eric Mitchell joins us, and been far too long since we've had a chance to talk to Eric. And first order of business is to congratulate him, first of all, on the story that earned him an Eclipse. Tracks join Rallying Cry to end cargo shipping, and this was a well-publicized conversation over the last couple of years. And the Caribbean off the track team that we've had on, going back to the hurricane, they called attention to this, and they really made it happen, and Eric helped a tremendous amount with the award-winning piece. Eric, congratulations, first of all.
Thank you, Steve. It's very, very kind of you to say so, and it's great to talk with you today. Hope all is well with you.
No complaints. And this story, because we had brought it up and had, I think, at least two visits about it. Talk about, first and foremost, how it came to your attention and the work that went into your piece originally that, helped galvanize, pressure from American racetracks against, management at Camarero and officials in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, actually, this began 2 years ago. It was back in April of 2019 that I got a call from Kim Heath down in Ocala. And Kim and I talked on a fairly regular basis, and she said, "Hey, we are hearing about this shipment of horses that went to Puerto Rico." Kim is very involved in the thoroughbred aftercare organization. She said, "We've heard about this shipment of horses that were going to Puerto Rico and that a lot of the horses died on the way." It's a huge tragedy. And when you deal with things that are, outside the United States, it takes a long time to verify stuff, and people had heard about it, but a lot of people didn't know some of the details, and somebody didn't want to talk about, a lot of people didn't want to talk about the details. But the bottom line is, you had a situation where you had 15 horses that were in a modified steel 40-foot shipping container, and something in transit happened, and eight horses died on that trip, and one horse so badly wounded it had to be put down on the docks. So that's where it started for me, was figuring out and talking to a lot of people about what happened, and then it starts you know, more starts coming out, you know, over time. We did eventually, you know, learn more of the details, which I'm not, you know, of what happened on board the ship, which really I'm not going to share because they're so graphic. But, you know, then you have this horrible incident, and then it's like nothing happened, right? Yeah, suddenly, you know, these horses, they continue to get chipped. And you start talking to people down in Puerto Rico, and they're like, this has been going on for a long time. It's a very, very inexpensive way for people to ship horses that are inexpensive. A lot of these are claimers from up and down the East Coast. And a lot of these horses are already towards the tail end of their careers. They get put in these containers, they get shipped down to Puerto Rico, and it's a grueling trip. I mean, it really is. They spend almost 3 days in these containers. It's tight quarters. There's no way to get to the horses if there's a problem. Earlier in the show, you had mentioned the air circulation. Yeah, I mean, they're in a container. There's excrement, there's urine, there's no circulation, they can't move. And so a lot of these horses survive the trip, which defenders of the practice will say, hey, this has been going on for 20-some-odd years, and, you know, the horses survive the trips, and they get back to the barns at Camarero, and they go on to become successful. Well, you know, there's a lot of these horses whose health gets compromised, the stress of the shipping. They develop respiratory problems later down the road, and a lot of these horses, their health gets compromised where they can't compete. They can't be competitive racehorses. So is there the one-off horse who survives and he goes on and he's able to race? Yes. But that is not the majority of the horses that are going through this, or what these horses go through. So it was something that I've had a lot of conversations with people over the years. I've been, you know, they have been very honest. Even people who are very successful down in Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico has a good program and they have good purses. And, you know, it's been stressed to me, look, not everybody is doing this. This is not the majority of owners and trainers in Puerto Rico, but it's enough who are participating, that they're compromising the health of these horses that just frankly need to be treated better. So that's how it got in. That's what got me into this, and so I started writing about it. And I've been very, it was really, really encouraging. And perhaps a tipping point, I think, not even want to say perhaps, it was a tipping point that racetracks became aware of it, got behind it, and started implementing these policies, because I think that carried a lot of weight with the Puerto Rico Racing Commission, which, you know, thankfully has recently made some changes.
How many horses on an annual basis, and I can't remember if I asked Chrissy this or Shelley Blodgett, but how many make that trip?
You know, it varies. It hasn't been consistent, and it used to be several years ago that these horses only got shipped on these boats during the cooler months because you know, being out in the middle of the in the Caribbean in the middle of the summer is brutal. But last year, and we wrote about how good the purses in Puerto Rico were last year, and they have a bonus program there. It's interesting the way things are set up in Puerto Rico that you know, you have a set amount of money that's committed to a race in terms of the purse, and then if the handle exceeds what was expected, which it did last year, they had a tremendous handle, and it produces an overage on the amount of money that the track gets for the purses, the track will turn around and pay bonus money back to the winners of these races. You know, so you might be running for a $6,000 claimer, and at the end of that month, the bonus money might be so good, you get twice the purse that you would have normally gotten. So there was this incentive for people to bring in inexpensive horses. And while these horses, you know, it wasn't a situation of catastrophic breakdown with these horses. It was not unlike the situation Aqueduct went through when the casino came online. And suddenly the value of the claiming races was just going through the roof. And people were bringing in horses that really had no business being out there racing to take advantage of these purses. Well, similar situation where a lot of, you know, the higher purses were drawing in the demand. So you'd have horses that were shipping in, you know, you'd have maybe three shipments a month, and you've got 10 to 12 horses in the containers, in each container. And the people at Caribbean Thoroughbred Aftercare, you know, they would say, you know, at the beginning of 2021, you know, they would say, well, you know, typically we would get 40 horses a year, you know, that would get handed off to us, and they couldn't race anymore. They needed to find new homes. By June of last year, June of 2021, they already had 78 horses that had been donated to their program. They were just getting inundated by horses that needed new homes. They couldn't race anymore. And they were seeing a lot of horses that were just simply, their health was compromised. They never even got a chance to compete. You know, so it varies. You know, it's a moving target that is the only way to answer that question, how many horses. But last year, it's hundreds of horses. Like, I think the last official count that I had was as of September, there had been 132 horses that had shipped in.
The system, and I mean, before we talk about what's going to change March 28th when these new rules go into place, one of the questions that was certainly part of this discussion at the time, Eric, was the health certificates, and ostensibly it seemed like there was potential to stop this by the same method that the export of horses for slaughter, or at least the slaughter process in the United States was extinguished, which was the USDA refusing to have on-site inspectors, basically, you know, basically ending the ability of any slaughterhouses, you know, and processing plants to operate. It seemed that one avenue was to shut off the ability for health certificates to be issued, which would then make it impossible to ship them, you know, as freight aboard a ship. And the discussion at that point also was that, you know, the expense is what? It's basically 100% more expensive to fly horses over than it is to put them on the boat.
Yeah, that's correct. Correct. It basically is doubled. You know, you're spending about $1,400 to ship them on boat. You're going to spend about $1,000 to ship by air.
Eric, when you mentioned, and I don't remember if I asked Chrissy or Shelley this question at the time, but when you said about the horses, you know, basically being, you know, left alone in the in their, you know, in the makeshift stalls, basically it's a, you know, the containers that you see that are then modified, you know, with open the cutouts and you know, they're basically lined up there like a factory farm. I referenced Premer and Mayer's earlier. Are there no human attendants in you know, in contact with the horses? How are the, that doesn't I'm incredulous that there isn't any kind of a groom or attendant.
There's supposed to be an attendant there, and you know, that's one of those things that it's very, I mean, I have been told that there is a person who travels with the horses, and that they make sure they have water and they make sure they have hay. And you know, I look at and that's, you know, strictly what I've heard. I haven't seen anything. I've never heard anything directly from the shipping company. Other than they're looking at the issue and they'll get back with me. But there's supposed to be an attendant there, and that is one of the requirements of that was spelled out by the Puerto Rican Racing Commission in some recent changes. But the issue is, even if there is a person there, and you look at how these containers are often stacked on ships, and I wonder where the attendant is in this scenario. But let's say there is a person there, and let's say there is a person there who's giving them water and giving them hay, and the way these horses are loaded into the box, if anything happens to any horse in these containers, the ability of an attendant to do anything is impossible. He can't get to them. There's no door. There's no way to let a horse out. There's no way to get to a horse. Certainly, you know, you're not going to squeeze yourself into a tight container with a 1,200-pound animal that's panicking. If that's the situation. So if there is a person there, the person is limited to basically providing water and hay to the horses while they're there.
I was curious about that aspect. Well, then with that backdrop and with that background, talk about the, as you mentioned, the, you know, the wholesale shift of interest and pressure exerted by a handful of racetracks in the United States, led, I should mention, by Eric Hallstrom at Indiana Grand.
Yes, they were the first. They were the first, and you know, I give them a lot of credit for stepping out. I mean, you know, I talked to Eric, and he was just absolutely dumbfounded that this practice was happening anywhere. So, you know, so then, you know, they got, you know, they implemented a policy, and then, you know, First Racing, Stronics First Racing, they followed the policy, and there have been, you know, several organizations. Penn Nationals got behind it, and then you've had other horsemen's organizations and in Florida, and the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission came out with a statement as well. So, but that's really what you needed. You know, you needed people who actually have some leverage to say, we're not going to tolerate this. You know, so I mean, and in the changes that the Puerto Rican Racing Commission made, they made a point to say, hey, U.S. racetracks are not going to tolerate this, and that is not going to be good for Puerto Rican racing. We need to make some changes.
Well, talk about what transpired with the Gaming Commission, and the approval came during the Christmas to New Year period, and a 90-day implementation, and there's widespread approval and appreciation. There's also some pushback.
Yeah, sure. And one of the things that had come out in a lot of conversations I had with people early on was that, shipping horses by boat is not anything new, right? I mean, we've been shipping horses on boats for a while. But it's how they're being shipped. And I've heard from, I've heard from several people in Europe that were, interested in saying, hey, look, you can do this in a humane way, but what you are shipping them in is basically a box stall, not a modified cargo shipping container where the horse has space to move, the horse can lay down if he needs to lay down, and it's just, so now you have space, and space provides, a humane environment for the horse, and it provides access for an attendant if a horse has an issue, if he gets injured and you need to get to him. So that was one of the key changes made in this Racing Commission order. And we do need to note that this applies only to thoroughbreds, because that is what the Racing Commission has jurisdiction over, is thoroughbreds. And there are a lot of standardbreds that get shipped to Puerto Rico in these cargo containers as well, and these rules aren't going to apply to these standardbreds. But for thoroughbreds, they are now required to be in a 40-square-foot area, and an 8-foot-long by 5-foot-wide box that's got a minimum height of 8 feet. They have to be cognizant of the temperature. The box stall, the container needs to be protected from the weather, but it also can't be, completely closed in by other cargo containers on this ship. They have to allow enough space for ventilation. These containers have to have two doors, on basically what would be the front and the back of this container. It is now required that an attendant absolutely needs to be there. Their first aid kit needs to be available. They had some other requirements. And, I was really impressed by how much detail they put into this in terms of, the ramp, and what kind of ramp they use to get in and off, I give them a lot of credit for stepping up and making these changes, and now I'm crossing my fingers that they're going to get enforced.
It takes effect in another just a little over 2 months, and I did see you mentioned the standardbreds versus the thoroughbreds, and that was a revelation. I unsanctioned. What do they do with the standardbreds in the islands? They've unsanctioned harness races.
They're like street races. I kid you not, I have been given the name of these, and I don't speak Spanish, and I don't want to butcher the name on your show, but basically, they are unsanctioned street races, head to head races, and the way the horses move. The horse has to have a specific gait, and it is the gait that that is natural to standardbreds. These are not regulated. Apparently, a lot of money is wagered on these races, And these standard breds are the go-to horse for this type of, and people will say it's not, you can't really call it clandestine racing. He said, because it's very popular. And that's what they're being shipped for.
You know, one of the it's amazing every time we have one of these conversations, Eric Mitchell with us from the Blood Horse, as we talk about the new rules that the Puerto Rican Gaming Commission, in response to the outcry over the containerized freight shipping of thoroughbreds to Puerto Rico, the ships, I think, do they all come out of Jacksonville?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Tote Maritime out of Jacksonville and here's the interesting thing. The same parent company that owns Tote Maritime also owns the company that ships these horses by air to Puerto Rico. The company itself is not really losing anything by changing from shipping by cargo ship to shipping by air. There's no financial loss for them.
Well, the revelations that come out. One of the things that when we talked, as part of follow up to the hurricane, the desperate situation that it was that. It triggered at Camarero, getting the horses out that were at that time, and then this was the next problematic issue. But one of the revelations out of all this was also the trickle down when it comes to horses moving from Puerto Rico to St. Croix and to Barbados and to other islands, and basically for those that think that going down the claiming ladder and then getting to Puerto Rico is the last stop, that there's even further rungs down the ladder that these horses disappear. And I mean, nobody's keeping track of them once they leave Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I can't really speak to that because I don't know, but
yeah, that's,
I suspect that there's a lot of horses that just disappear.
Yeah. Well, and that, this all kind of tracks back to, one of the things that gets us, it's taken us forever to get to this microchipping era. The microchip passport, Eric, that horses can,
right,
can have now. And of course we're doing digital registration of horses now, how much of this, we'll see what, part of the whole HISA, the potential HISA era, would make it, that much easier. Microchipped horses would make it that much easier to know where they are, via tracking.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I don't think it's easy and pat to, say, oh, it's a happy ending. But it certainly, Eric, in an era where we can't necessarily celebrate a problem being identified and then addressed and a reasonable response and solution, this does feel like it's something to celebrate and feel good about, that appropriate action was taken to, and I don't care what the one agent had to say, that, well, there was only one incident of 8 dead horses, 9 dead horses. That's the only time it happened in 20 years, so this is an overreaction. That seems like a pretty unreasonable response.
Well, and what that response doesn't cover is all the horses, you know, that whose health was compromised by putting in this this horrible condition, and you know, the respiratory illnesses they suffered, and the laminitis they suffered, and the pleural pneumonia that they suffered down the road. You know, it's just, it's not enough to say, oh, well, they survived the trip. You know, well, what good is that? You know, oh, they survived this horrendous trip only so that 30 days later we could put them down at Camarero. It's just unconscionable. And you're right. You know, the way I look at it is it feels like progress, and that's positive. You know, it's hard because this situation existed, you know, and it's hard when horses are being subject to this, and you know, yeah, we got till March 28th when these rules go into effect. Well, that's two more months of horses that can continue to be shipped this way. Very thankful to see changes made. Very thankful for all the work that CTA does down there to care for these horses that need it, and the diligence that they put into caring for these horses and finding new homes for them, and you know, making sure the ones that they can live out their days in peace. So that's a huge thing. But you know, the fact that this has been going on for as long as it has is still hard to swallow.
Well, I can't wrap up the segment too without acknowledging, because you wrote something too over the holiday, and just coming out of the new year, the Puerto Rican Racing Commission sent a positive tone as well with a nice donation to the Caribbean aftercare team. And when we've had them on, Kelly Stobie and Christy and Shelley Blodgett, you know, and then all of the, you know, all of the mainland-based teams that have taken the horses on. That it includes Rerun and New Vocations with their new Ocala facility, which helps, you know, because these horses need to be quarantined and so forth. I mean, there's the work, Eric, that goes into this, to, you know, finding these horses, and they invariably come back in rough shape. I mean, they're not. The retirees out of Puerto Rico, you know, are not coming back sound, rarely. So they invariably need, you know, 6 months, 9 months, a year to recoup before they can be retrained. So the money that goes toward the group is really well spent. And as you mentioned, they had a you know, an avalanche of retirements to deal with, but they pulled it out with six figures in donations to, you know, to balance the books at the end of the year.
Yeah, absolutely, and encouraging also to hear from Kelly down there that there are some people down there who have gotten, you know, through you know, show horses down there, families connected to show horses have learned about the mission that the CTA has, and they've gotten excited about it, and they've got interested in it, and they're people of means, you know. So you know, to end this thing on maybe a more positive note, you know, you've got some new people that are becoming aware of the issues that these horses face and the resources that they need, and that there's organizations out there that are set up to do it. They just need the funds. And so, you know, at this point, you know, it looks really, really encouraging. I know the need is always great, and the the fundraising never stops because the needs that these horses have never stops, you know. So, but it, I was encouraged to see, to hear, you know, new names, new faces getting behind it. So that's a very positive thing to start off this year.
Nice. And I do see that Gulfstream made a donation. There was $25,000 from Camarero itself during the Caribe, the Classico card that they run. This year it was back in Puerto Rico after a couple of years and two, 3 years at Gulfstream. The commission has mentioned, plus mainland donations. And whenever we have Kelly or Chrissy or Shelley Blodgett on, you can source them out at the Twitter Caribbean OTTB, which is Caribbean Thoroughbred Aftercare, and the work that they've done. If you want to go to the website ctahorse.com, the money and obviously, you know, all the aftercare and retraining organizations domestically need our help, and you know, we discuss this. We different ones every month. We seem to shine the spotlight in this direction, but you know, these are horses that, you know, it's not like these are, it's not like you're giving money to somebody, to foreign horses. These are horses that campaigned in the United States before they got to Puerto Rico.
Absolutely.
And as was forgotten in the previous administration, Puerto Rico is part of the United States. Those are American citizens, for those that seem to have forgotten that.
Your
money.
One of the things that CTA faces that, you know, a lot of organizations don't, is they are on an island. You know, they can't just, you know, build sanctuaries and just keep all these horses there. Although there is, you know, there's some talk about providing something similar to like Old Friends down there, which I think is needed and will, you know, get people more aware of horses and get them, you know, that one-on-one experience, which I think is really important in building this understanding and rapport. But a lot of these horses, I mean, they have to go through quarantine and you got to ship them, and that's a lot of money.
CTA Horse, the website for .com, CTA Horse, to learn more about the Caribbean Thoroughbred Aftercare. Eric, terrific to catch up. Haven't seen you in ages, but it's great to talk. Congratulations again on the Eclipse.
Thank you, Steve. Always a pleasure to talk with you. Enjoy the show. Keep up the good work, and thank you very much.
Not at all. Eric Mitchell, everybody, longtime blood horse, everything. Blood horse, you name it. There isn't any role at Blood Horse that Eric that Eric hasn't handled. Eric Mitchell, hour three, and Mig, hour two, and John Ortiz, hour one. That went a very very hour centric series of visits today. It is the MLK holiday, and there is racing, including at Santa Anita, as we mentioned, parks and fairgrounds. So good luck if you're playing. Lots more to do tomorrow at the races. 9 o'clock, if you missed anything. Replay 6 to 9. Website for archive and podcast, etc. Talk to you in the morning, everybody. Thanks.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.